Welcome, everybody, into what was once upon a time cathedral of the town and diocese of Hamad. I would like to welcome you all to the Museum of Domkirkeodden and Hedmark Museum. My name is Ranveig, and I'm going to take you on a little journey into the medieval times. When you entered the church today, you came in through the main entrance. In medieval times, very few people were allowed to do that. The main entrance was reserved for the bishop and his important guests when they were doing their processions. Common people like us had to walk around the church to the south side, and in an entranceway, small little doorway on the south. And as he came in, the room would be very dark. The only light in here would be candles burning on the 13 altars that were spread around the church. And the only natural light would be coming from three windows over the pillars. When you came in, before your eyes would adjust to the darkness, your gaze would automatically be drawn up towards the light, towards heaven and God. You would hear singing. The priests, the bishop and the canons would be in the choir, singing the Mass. And you would walk to your places. The women over to the north side, and the men would stay here in the south. We would not be sitting like we are today, but standing up or kneeling down. The diocese here was established in 1152, and they started building the church the very next year. They used local limestone from an island in the lake and from the hill north of the city. But the craftsmen, the builders, were mostly from Germany and England. And it should take 50 years before the church was completed. It was finished in 1200, and we think it looked approximately like this. Built in the Romanesque style, rounded arches, heavy, thick walls, almost fortress-like. It has three naves, one main nave, and two side naves. The chancel is right in front of us, has two chapels on each side, and there's another nave crossing it. So if you look at the church from above, it looks exactly like the shape of a cross. And as you can see, very little windows. Some small slits in the southern side, but none at all on the northern wall. Nothing whatsoever. In Middle Ages, they thought the devil and evil spirits will come from the north. So they didn't dare building any windows in the northern wall. And that's also the reason why they sent the women to the north side of the church. Not very fair. That's also the reason why the baptismal font is placed in the northwestern corner of the church, as far away from the main altar as possible. They also thought that evil spirits could attach to little unbaptized children. So it was a matter of getting them into the church and under holy water as soon as possible. And when I say under, I really do mean under. Because they didn't just put some water on the baby's head, they put the whole baby inside. In 1200, there also came some monks. They built the cathedral school. And for young boys from 11 and up who was learning to become priests. On top of that, as I said, the bishop had 13 canons, one for each altar. And the church seemed to become a little bit too small, the bishop thought, when we reached 1300 approximately. And besides, the style had changed. The Romanesque style was not in fashion anymore, but the Gothic style, with pointed arches, loads more decorations. So he started rebuilding the church, and he rebuilt it in Gothic style. The towers became taller. There was much more light. There was more windows. They got a huge stained glass window in the eastern wall. And the chancel was prolonged with about 8 to 10 meters. They also had red plaster on the inside of the arches. And all in all, much more decoration. All was well and good, but unfortunately, things that are well and good have a tendency of getting an end. So in 1536, the Reformation came up through Europe, and it also came to Norway. The Danish king, who was also ruling Norway at the time, told all the bishops to either convert or give up their positions, which most of them did, except for a few. The Archbishop of Trondheim, he fled to Holland, and our bishop here, our last bishop, he did not want to move anywhere. He stayed put. Nope, not moving. Not giving up my position either. And this he did for almost a year longer than the other bishops, Catholic bishops in Norway. So he was the last Norwegian Catholic bishop. But in 1537, the Danish king was sick and tired of him, so he sent an army towards him. And the castle wasn't strong enough, his fortress that is just behind us here. So it fell. The bishop was captured, sent off to Denmark in prison. The Danish king sent a sheriff up here to rule this part of the country. Now, the diocese was moved to Oslo, and the sheriff was a Protestant. He did not want to take care of this church. He did not want to do any maintenance. The church wasn't suitable for Protestant services, and he did not do anything with it. The canons were still using it. But in 1567, the final straw came. The Swedes were at war with the Union of Norway and Denmark. They had sent an army towards Akershus Castle in Oslo, but not managed to get anywhere with that. The soldiers were mercenaries, paid with only the things they could plunder. They didn't get anything in Oslo. So on the way back, they came here. They used cannons and totally destroyed the castle behind us. They put fire to the town as well. They set fire to the town. Never touched the church. But the roof of the church here, not like the rest, many, very many churches in Europe, has roofs of lead. This one was wooden. So sparks were flying in the air. Some of them landed on the roof, and it all went up in a fire. Limestone is very sensitive to heat and cold. So the stone started cracking, falling down. After the fire, this was completely destroyed. They tried to do some bit of restoration behind me here. They made walls in the opening of the chancel and put a roof on it and used it as a church for a few years. But in 1584, there was no more money from the Danish king, and this whole area was turned into agricultural land. Kyrie Gud Fader, Amen. years after the destruction, people started noticing that there was loads of stones here, nicely crafted stones, just finished to build with. And since there was nothing left here, people started coming, taking stones, building barns around here, farm outbuildings, and some also took stones and restored maintenance and made maintenance on churches with them. One of our churches actually has a whole new part built with only stones from this church. In 1695, a farmer came and bought the land around here. He used the remains of the castle to build a huge barn, actually the biggest and most modern barn in Norway at the time. And so it was for almost 100 years, actually. And he used stones from the church as well to do that. And he also used the church in other ways, because in the chancel and in the chapels, the most holy parts of the church, well, he used them as a cowshed. He kept his cattle and his pigs in here. All in all, you can say that the thought of recycling was very strong in those days. Because our altar stone, we found it in the garden down here, used as a stepping stone in a stair. And the baptismal font as well has a funny story. It's actually not from this church. It's from a stave church which was located just south of the bay here. They tore it down in the 1600s to build a new stone church, modern one, bigger one. And the baptismal font disappeared. It was nowhere to be found. But 300 years later, in the 20th century, a farmer came and donated it to the museum. And we said, great. It's from the 13th century. Suits perfectly the church here. And he said, yes, well, I'll have to tell you what we have used it for. And we said, okay. And he said, well, we have used it as an outdoor toilet. So we cleaned it well. And now it's down there. But the thought of taking care of these ruins did not catch root in people until the mid-19th century. Norway was in the middle of the process of freeing themselves from the union of Denmark and Sweden. And in that process, we were looking for our own Norwegian identity. And suddenly, things like this, old ruins, old power symbols from the time Norway was a great nation, became incredibly important. Not just old buildings, but also music, poems, written things, whatever they could find that could be led back to the time before the unions. Hamar city was completely destroyed after the war in 1567. It vanished from the face of the earth. But it was resurrected in 1849 as a railway town. And to the people of Hamar, these ruins became a symbol of background and identity. The thought of starting to preserve ruins like this was born in the years around 1850. And so it happened here as well. If you can see the black, it looks like black paint actually on the walls. That is actually tar. They used to try to preserve the stone walls here. The only problem with that was, although tar preserves wood very, very good, it has no effect on stone whatsoever. So that didn't help much. They also put slate tiles on top of the walls to try to prevent water coming into the ruins and into the stone walls, which was much more helpful, actually, because water seeps into these ruins and makes them very waterlogged. And they also started excavating parts of this area here. But although all that, these ruins were outside, prone to wind and weather, and getting in worse and worse condition. The Bishop's Fortress behind me here was made into a museum in 1974, designed by the Norwegian architect Sverre Fehn. But the ruins here were still out in the open. And in 1985, due to all the water inside the walls, which in the winter froze, because it gets really cold here in the winter, it can get down to minus 25, minus 30 degrees Celsius, which is very cold, and it freezes, and it actually cracks the stone from the inside. So in 1985, the row of pillars here, the very symbol of the town of Hamad, was almost falling over and falling down. Something had to be done to save them. So the first thing they did was something not temporary. They put green plastic all over them to keep them out of the rain, which was not very pretty. So they decided to do something else. They decided to build a protective structure around the ruins here. They made an architect competition, and the man who won with this building here, and his name is Kjellin, from Kjellin and Slotto, architect in Lillehammer. He won with this building called Poetry of Reason. The reason being, they're protecting the ruins. The poetry is, it's like a silk veil has been dropped from the heavens to cover and protect the ruins. But in 1987, there was, first of all, no money to build this structure, and no technology neither. So what they did, they waited. And we got planning permission from the Norwegian government in 1992, but there was still no money. And besides, the people of Hamar was not agreeing on whether this should be built or not, because some people thought it was going to be too ugly. And other people said, well, no, it's going to be okay. But the money was the real issue here. And in the middle of the 90s, we got a donation from an American businessman whose wife whose name was Gerd Tuna Ellefsen Perkins, was from Hamar. She unfortunately died very young of cancer, and in her memory, the husband donated 10 million Norwegian kroners to the building of this structure. Now, there was a but. Because he made a little clause in this gift saying, if you haven't started building within the next 3 years, I will take the money back. And the people from around here are known for being quite slow. I can say that because I'm from here myself. But believe me, they really sped things up when this happened. We collected another 6 million, and then the government said that they would pay the rest, which was good, because the budget was 46 million kroners. It ended up being 76 million kroners. But it was finished in 1998, the 9th of August, and since then, we had a completely new room here. The old ruins are almost turned into a church again. It's like we have the old cathedral back. And we use it a lot today as well. It's also become almost a cultural institution. There's a lot of things going on here. We have baptisms. In our very clean baptismal font, I promise. We have cleaned it very well. We have weddings every second Saturday the whole summer. Three weddings every second Saturday. And as you can hear from the acoustics, which are quite amazing and special, it's used a lot for concerts. And also, we have Protestant services in here and Catholic masses as well on special occasions. But I said there was a lot of weddings in here. So we thought we're going to give you a wedding march. Just so you can feel some of the atmosphere in here. It might be when there's a wedding going on.